Welcome to Framework of Field.
Framework is a show consecrated to field recording and its use in composition. Field recording, phonography, the art of sound hunting. Open your ears and listen. Framework Afield is a series of special editions curated and produced by guest artists from around the world. A new edition airs every second week, alternating with our usual Framework broadcasts. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. This is the first in a series of programs produced by the participants of the Field Recording and Creative Radio Workshop, which took place at the Digital Media Center at South Hill Park, United Kingdom, in October 2010. This edition has been produced by the workshop's organizer, Martin Franklin. For more information, see www.digitalmediacenter.org.
In autumn 2010, I organised a series of sonic arts events as part of the digital media programme at South Hill Park, an arts centre 25 miles west of London in Berkshire. One of the events in that series was a field recording and creative radio weekend led by Patrick McGinley. Four of the artists who joined us on that weekend have gone on to produce 4 one-hour episodes of Framework Afield. This episode documents part of the weekend itself and follows the progress of each of these artists as they develop their work. You'll hear conversation and recordings from Thea Stallwood, Lisa Hall, Sam Levine and Jane Pitt. This episode was produced by me, Martin Franklin.
A lot of the points we were hitting yesterday were sort of general. In it, like you noticed, probably when we were planning this, there are a lot of different directions I take with workshops, but all of them focus on listening as an active participation in a space, and all of them, for all of them, listening is the essential kind of common denominator. So those exercises I tend to do in pretty much every workshop because they are simply about concentrating on the act of listening and about listening to our space and our environment. So whether we're doing a more performative workshop or radio or field recording, or it all centers on those elements. Yeah, I think those points of like entering those spaces sort of mentally are what leads to the possibility of concentrating more deeply on perception and on your individual perception and changing sort of the mind states. So those elements of kind of giving over control or trust or being in what is a new or potentially uncomfortable situation all lend themselves to a deeper exploration of the senses, really.
So the next thing I want to do, Martin, if you've taken pictures, it's good that there's an even number of you. That means I don't have to do it too. it's kind of similar. It's a listening exercise. We're still not going to go for the technology, not quite yet. But we're going to do, sound walks together. I guess have you all done some form of sound walking before? In what form does it take? Actually, I'm quite curious because I've only ever done them this way, but I haven't told you what it is yet.
No.
But you tell me first.
Silent walks.
Silent walks. Were you with a group?
Yeah.
Eyes open.
Yeah.
Is that basically what you call them?
Solo.
Yeah. Solo, but it's kind of a different thing. Yeah. I mean, I've never done like a guided one. I've done a lot of walking around.
Sure. I've never quite understood the group. I've never done one. Yeah. But
I
a group sound.
Doing it with
15,
yeah. But it wasn't about sound, it was about sense recognition. Yeah. People bite more.
Yeah. Well, what we're going to do is blind sound walks. So you're going to be with partner. We have to work out how to do this so that there's enough time for everything, but that the whole thing doesn't take 3 hours. What I want, there are a few different combinations of what I would like to happen. First of all, each person gets a turn being the guide and being the guidee. So for instance, first you two are gonna shut your eyes and you two are going to be their seeing eye dog, basically. No. Within that context, there are two interactions that I would like to see happen. One is that the guide leads, chooses the route, make sure you'll have to find your own language for how to save these, you know, hopefully without voice, be able to say, here are some stairs, or, I mean, obviously if you have to say, stop, you can speak. Yeah. So that's one situation is the guides will choose the route. The other situation that I would really like to see happen, is that the blind person leads by ear. And what the guide does in that context really is just make sure you're safe. Or obviously if you're leading and you are walking directly for a wall, you're gonna have to stop them and kind of redirect. But essentially what you wanna do is stop and imply that they'll have to choose a different direction and then you can adjust where you're going. But those are the two situations I would like to see happen. They have to happen both ways, so you have to take a certain amount of time. Then after a certain amount of time, you'll switch roles. And maybe we can just mirror image it. Do you think it matters whether you lead or are led first? If you switch, then when you guys are first blind, do you think it's okay to start with you leading and then to let them lead? We try it, see.
Yeah,
I guess if we can back up here as well.
Yeah, so then you'll have...
Yeah.
I mean, somebody has to go first.
Mm-hmm. You too, so 10 minutes, you'll be led.
Try it in our
Take them around the building a bit. I mean, I think it's pretty clear what's allowed, where it's allowed to go and where not.
Yeah.
Try to make it so that you have a few minutes to lead them outside, and then when the 10 minutes are up, you can say something. Take over.
blind sound walk was sort of terrifying, actually, for me. I found that really hard. But I think it was a really interesting exercise for your kind of powerlessness and your relation to sound and touch through your environment. The 50-minute durational listening was amazing, actually, especially the bit about going through your boredom levels and through your self-consciousness levels and just kind of being and listening was a really interesting exercise. But I think I probably reacted to it slightly, or it seemed I reacted slightly differently to everybody or other people who were more analytical about hearing the sound excerpts, sort of saying, oh yes, the tones that were used in the fourth recording contrasted with the ones in the seventh recording. And I had literally just sort of succumbed to the recording and gone into a little bit of a trance, really. Actually start off with I think the blind walking is a really good tool, but if you don't know the person you're walking with, it's just that starting off, but once you get into your stride, it's fascinating, partly because the person, we were doing it so that the person leads you, the seeing person leads the person who either closed their eyes or blindfolded on a journey. So you're kind of being given a tour by somebody else. It's like you're kind of filtered through their ears, maybe. So they're trying to find places for you to listen to. But I found it much easier actually to listen when I was leading. So I was trusting the other person completely to make sure I didn't fall down any holes. And actually I felt bolder when I was leading. I guess you're directing yourself, so you're going towards a sound or going away from a sound. You're kind of seeking things out or trying things out. And also because we were led before for the 10 minutes, we kind of got into that state of being. When you do any work with any, stripping away one sense or depriving yourself of one sense, you kind of get a bit of an overload of another sense or senses, which is, you know, a powerful way to experience.
The things we've been talking about since doing all these listening exercises have been certain contrasting qualities in both in sound activity and in recording possibility. So for instance, now that we've kind of warmed up our ears, and I hope that we're a bit more attuned to listening to small fragments of the environment that we might not have noticed before, we're looking for within those environments a contrasting pair of sounds, one of which is an open, audible situation with the naked ear in space, and one which, from the same space, is some sort of hidden element of sound. So for instance, a lot of the recordings we listen to in the listening session could be examples of objects resonating within themselves that you can't hear out loud, but with the aid of a contact microphone are audible, or resonances within confined spaces that you can't hear with the naked ear because your head doesn't fit in that particular space, like within empty bottles, or like what one of our participants was playing earlier, recordings from inside a mole run underground. So they're out now looking for a single space that can provide them both an open field recording and a hidden field recording, as sort of two different perspectives on the same space. The other pair, which is not to do with a contrast in the space itself or the recording itself, but to do with the recorder's interaction with the space, is to find a single space that provides them the opportunity to make both a passive recording and an active recording. And by that, what I mean is the difference between finding a space that is resonating somehow on its own, in which, as a recordist, you can arrive, place your microphone, stand back, and let the recording happen. That's what I call a passive recording. And an active recording, which involves an interaction with a space or a participation with a space. So it might be finding objects on the ground that you can move or manipulate or resonate somehow to kind of bring via external influence a voice to a space that was otherwise inactive. So they're out now looking for those two contrasting pairs of recordings.
Do you want to go up to the top floor?
No, I'm just
on the ledge, the first,
yeah. Right here on the lift.
Cool. Is it going well?
Yeah. The lift's a lovely place to record, actually.
It's brilliant. I once went into a lift recently in a gallery where when the lift went down, it went up. When it went up, it went up. It was very fun music.
Thank you.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
I've studied architecture, and everything about the way it's represented is through visual and like having images, and it doesn't say anything about the way things sound. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of encourages architects to think in a really visual way and not really imagine sound, and then sound becomes a kind of thing that's added afterwards, like kind of, you know, acoustic panels get added to things, and just to kind of make the reverb time the right thing. And it becomes an engineering thing rather than an artistic thing. So I'm interested in encouraging people, like architects, to start using sound to represent their projects and sort of start thinking about it in a more artistic way. So I think it'd be really nice to talk to some people, like maybe get some, because I know quite a few people who are interested in sound and architecture, and do some interviews and ask them to maybe do a, like short pieces that might represent like a project that they've done.
Oh, okay.
And maybe even mix it in a bit with like representations of built projects as well. So there's kind of, so that you don't sort of draw this big distinction between what's built and what's not built.
I thought through, I kind of flicked through the whole day of what we'd done yesterday and thought, you know, shall I take something new from the day? And then I realised, I'd completely forgotten that actually I've been wanting to make a radio, something radio from a project that I'm kind of still ongoing. But the reason I haven't was because I didn't want it to make a documentary. So kind of everything that we were doing yesterday has made me realise now more how I could possibly make that work. And it's what I talked about yesterday, where I invite people to come and explore and experience and make vocal utterings in places using phonetic language. So definitely not structured language, so it's it evolves as it goes along. And so I'd like to try to put together field recordings of the places these are made about and in, and the vocal utterings, and perhaps a bit of the people making that journey, so the, how they begin, but without the kind of vocal, the narrative over the top.
Without the explicit explanation.
Yes,
of what's going on.
Yes, yes. So the people, just ordinary people. So, so yeah, it's there. So I guess really for me, it's a. Because it was really interesting playing a little bit with the mics yesterday, because I don't know really anything about that, and it's made me think much more about how I can make recordings of the place as much as encouraging the people to listen and then make their experiences. So that's where I am, I think. Yep.
Ray. Cheek plink.
Quack, come on.
Quack, quack, boosh. Boosh.
One.
I make these little booklets called Plan for Space. These are less glamorous editions. I've got some more fancy ones, which are very visually pleasing, but obviously it's all content-wise about sound. So these are kind of faux architectural plans for particular spaces that I've identified. So this was a particular housing estate, but it could be any derelict housing estate. This idea of these booklets is looking at where there is a rift between a space and the use or the behaviour within that space, where these two things start mismatching, and how we can address that rift through sound. So almost sonic architecture. So these plans are proposing a kind of sonic architecture to cause some kind of effect. So I very much work with soundscapes as a method, as a testing ground, as the midpoint. So I'm now very much looking at how I sonify this. So do I take this very text, because these are very text-heavy booklets, really going through all the theory of analysing what this space is and how it works, then proposing these interventions, because that's how the sound always is used, and then looking at the results of that and playing around with different means. But they're always quite open-ended things. How I work with that now as a radio piece only, and take away the kind of the visual crux that hold up these works. So I was looking at, so for the plan for urban space that I was looking at, I did a series of experiments looking at how we can modify the soundscapes that we were within in urban space. And so I've got sort of four or five different experiments, either in planting soundscapes in a kind of graffiti style, or constructing spaces through sonic intervention, or modifying the existing soundscapes, modifying people's own interventions with that, i.e. through headphones and music.
Fuck.
for this radio piece, I'm looking at my initial reaction was, okay, I want to talk about this last piece that I've just done, looking at urban space. Do I kind of make it a documentary style broadcast where I'm reading through this theory and there are these soundscapes that will come in and out of? Or do I, and I started doing this and started working through, but I never work with the voice, so this is very new territory. And I was looking at different, you know, different people speaking, different ways of speaking this, and nothing's quite okay with me yet. It seems a bit too dry or a bit too formal. So I was looking at, okay, perhaps, you know, this is about the soundscape, so why not relax back and actually play these soundscapes with the interventions, and how do I contextualise that for a listener of these are aspects of graffiti or intervention, and what the aim is of looking at how our spaces are controlling and why there is a detachment, and how do I put all of this in, but without being too heavy on the descriptions and the vocals. So the sound you've got that I've given you is the first plan for space I did, which is working with that derelict housing estate. You were very aware all of a sudden that the main users of this space were birds. So I did two interventions, one playing this bird song to see if I could increase habitation of birds in the space to more usefully populate it while it's in this in-between status. And the other one was quite redundantly playing earthquake sounds to the building just to see what would happen. So I've got hold of the Indonesian earthquake. So the sound you hear on that, the sound I've given you is a sound walk through this estate from the cars outside into the space, and then you'll hear the quiet area that is the estate, and then you'll walk into this sonic, this intervention of birds, and you'll hear a massive difference. Then you walk back out of it into a normal space, then you walk into the earthquake intervention spaces, and then when you walk back out to the cars. And obviously in these, unless you've got the text, which they were originally accompanying the sounds, you wouldn't necessarily know that these are artistically intervened sounds. So that's a kind of a raw audio, and now I'm going to figure out how with vocals I give it context. Because I could leave the sound alone to do its thing, but for me my interest is the process, which is a specific thing, and it's quite nice having realised that through this year. So it's about now, how do I embrace that, make it interesting to other people as opposed to just weighing people down with excessive thinking about something they might not be very interested in.
Electrical equipment will often produce resonant harmonics, and in a quiet city at night, a whole series of steady pitches may be heard from the street, lighting, signs, and generators. When we were studying the soundscape of a Swedish village of Skruv in 1975, we encountered a large number of these and plotted their profiles and pitches on a map. We were surprised to find that together they produced a G-sharp major triad, which the F-sharp whistles of passing trains turned into a dominant seventh chord. As we moved around the streets on quiet evenings, the town played melodies. It starts off with it's me reading a quote out of The Tuning of the World about them going to Scruff in the 1975 and finding these electrical resonances, and they kind of start to make melodies, and they're talking about walking around and hearing the city playing tunes to them, and then it sort of cuts to recording of a plane from inside a bin and it's kind of shaking around, and then I've got these recordings of air conditioning units from inside pipes, and they're different lengths, so like they kind of resonate at different frequencies, and I've sort of overlaid them so they sort of harmonize, and then it kind of builds up and then it kind of cuts down, and then it goes into a really low kind of really quiet kind of resonance, a bit like this in this room. I don't know, I'm really into like I don't know if I should admit this, like, but I'm really into like sci-fi movies, and like one of my favorite directors is like Tarkovsky, and like, you know, the sort of Stalker movies and the sort of sounds that you get from that, and like, you kind of hear these sounds all the time, and it's kind of got an element of fantasy to it, but it's sort of everyday, and yeah. Like, I started off with the idea that I was going to go and interview people who work with sound and architecture, and sort of make a series of interviews and link them and tape them and cut and splice them together into a sort of topical debate about architecture and sound. And I did the first interview, which is actually really great, but it wasn't really what I wanted to get out of doing this project. So I started to sort of record things like I'd been doing at South Hill Park, just things that I was interested in. And I found like the biggest sounds that sort of dominated most of the spaces I was listening to were actually like electrical and sort of service engineering sounds, which aren't designed at all by architects. They're just sort of a byproduct of engineering. And like they're kind of there everywhere, and there's a whole like load of things that people have written about how you can go to. But there was the World Soundscape Project did a thing in the 70s where they went to students at different universities and asked them to like hum their background tone, and you just hum a note, whatever comes to your head, and they found that the notes that people were singing were like linked to the electrical resonant frequencies of those countries. So it's kind of really there in the background, and it's like really affecting, it's like really subliminal, and you don't realize it's there, but it does, like, it's kind of inside you, like just being great, just going around and actually listening to what these sounds are. And I think it's something that a lot of people would enjoy doing. And so basically I've been putting together a sort of collage of these recordings of like resonances and electrical sounds, and hopefully it might like open people's ears a bit to the sort of sounds that you can hear when you're walking around. Yeah, because I mean, I spent a lot of time at uni writing about all this stuff that other people were doing, and like, he's doing this and he's doing this, and like, I wanted to just do something that's about what I'm doing and what I'm interested in, and that's basically why I decided to start doing something that was more based on just recording and making sound. And the whole idea about kind of listening is, I don't know, I think you can, like, there's a lot of talking that goes on around it, but then, like, ultimately you've got to kind of just sit there and listen to it, and that's, what I've kind of focused on. So it's just recordings, and, you know, you sit, and there are things that you might recognise or you might not, and maybe it might open people's ears to things that they didn't notice before. But I was just amazed, like, how most spaces are just completely dominated by undesigned sound. Like, if you just listen in here, you can, it's just like, and that's the sound of this space, you know? Like, it's not anything, like, anything higher or more sophisticated than that. It's just the sound that the air conditioning's making. I think it's air conditioning.
Yeah.
Or the lights, actually, probably the lights. I've been looking a lot just in kind of, there's this whole load of tower blocks near to where I live, and they have air conditioning units on the outside, so they're really accessible, and I can just go around and kind of record from them and stick mics in different places, like up drain pipes and down little cubby holes, and see what that sounds like. And I think I'm going to carry on doing that, because it seems to be getting some interesting sounds from those spaces. I've got about 5 minutes of kind of edited material. There's going to be a bit of a few quotes from The Tuning of the World in there. To kind of just put it in context, because I'm interested in architecture and design, and the way you experience architecture is through your ears, ultimately. So I'm interested in how you can represent that.
It's called The Great Lines, which it's been called that since 1756, when it was compulsory purchase by the army. And I'm drawn to it because it's a transitional space between the two Medway towns of Chatham and Gillingham. And I live on the Chatham side, which is, you know, there's an incredibly steep hill to get up onto it. But if you live on the other side, it's flat, so people access it much more easily that way, and others don't. And it's a kind of a bit of a liminal world space between those more urban spaces. And there's, you know, it's very tall grass. Up until last October, there were just desire lines crossing it. You know, it is a sort of place that people use to get from A to B. Some people use it for other, you know, so it's one of those kind of slightly vulnerable but wild places. In the process of turning it into a potential World Heritage Site, they've carved straight paths across it and changed the nature of it quite a lot. Some of that sound has gone that the place had, but there must be new things coming into that, because they've kind of opened the space up in some ways. But I made a new flutterance in a new place, because the people that I work with wanted to try some new spaces, so I've just been going off with them to where they want to go. And we've been to a beach called Shellness, which is right on the edge of the Isle of Sheppey, so it's kind of a bit like the edge of the world in a way. So that's where we made the most recent one.
That's what it says.
That's the Finnish one says.
Yeah.
Ah, they speak
different
language.
The English ones say Takaluukko.
Takaluukko.
If you listen to them, the rhythm is Takaluukko.
Takaluukko.
And then sometimes they do that, the extra.
Ooh. there's two parts. One, which I was my how I first envisioned the beginning being. So there's a kind of a bit of field recording on the Great Lines, in part of the spaces that we walked in, and then that follows into the first ever walk we did together, where we started making these utterances together. Because that, yeah, kind of, I suppose my intention was that they are give you an idea of what those sounds might mean later on. And then, I can't remember now. Yeah, there is a bit more field recording on the end of that, I think. And then the other one is in the final place, my new place. But there's a town on a small holiday resort on the way to the beach. So I wanted to bring in some of those sounds, those slot machine shops, and because there feels like there's a real correlation between those crazy slot machine places and the waders that are there in the winter. It's this incredible sounds out on, because it's part estuary, part river, part sea. So there's all this convergence of all these incredible sounds together. I quite liked trying to bring those together a bit. I mean, that's what, you know, for me, this is a different process to the work I've made before. So it's exciting, and I'm making mistakes and learning stuff, which is always good.
Hold on. The next station is Embankment. Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
The door buttons are now activated. This is Echo.
It started thinking about the sounds which direct us around a space or manipulate one's movement around a space. Well, I seem to spend my life in either trains or lifts. I live and work on eight floors, so I'm forever going up and down them, and I'm always in trains. And I was that was a sort of a starting point, thinking about the different sounds which become quite embedded in your psyche about a warning sound or, okay, now I can go.
Doors opening. Doors closing.
Lift going down. Doors closing.
Lift going up.
Lower ground floor. Cloakroom, locker room, exhibition gallery, and evacuation room.
Ground floor. City office.
Upper ground floor.
First floor. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth floor.
You have been listening to Framework Afield. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. Thanks for listening.